Today I sit down with Kurt Holland, knife maker and owner of Free Hill Blades. Listen in how this 24-year-old took a lifelong passion, built a network of the best knife makers in the world, and is clearly heading towards being one of the best in the world himself, if not already.
This is Eric with Bucket Talk, your host of the Down to Business show. I sit down with owners, operators, and executives of successful businesses in the trades, ranging from one-man operators to large-scale employers. We peek behind the curtain on what it's like, from taking the leap and starting out to climbing to the top of a larger company.
Hey guys, Eric here with Kurt Holland, knife maker and owner of Free Hill Blades. Kurt, I want to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule, especially before we head into a long weekend, and taking time to talk to the folks here at Bucket Talk.
Yeah, no problem.
Awesome, awesome. So before we get into all things you're passionate about in knife making and all things Free Hill Blades, take us back to the early days, you know, where you grew up, what you got into, what you didn't get into, and give us a little history on who you are.
Yeah, so I grew up in Virginia near the Chesapeake, in the Chesapeake area, and yep. Me and my dad would go fishing together, and we would always, I always loved knives, I just always have. I had a best friend, his name's Jeremiah, and he got me into knives. He collected knives, and so I collected knives that were like, you know, they were worth $2. I was a kid, but regardless, it made me really love knives.
What was it you liked, like whittling, you like taking care of them, you like sharpening them? What was kind of the draw there?
Yeah, so I loved knives back then because I could take them camping. I love to whittle or pretend to whittle, and I just loved having it to use. I just love the utility of it. I don't even know why, you know. I was a boy, you know, so but camping mostly is just like I had a knife on my hip since I was old enough to hold a knife. So that's kind of where that started, where I started to love knives. And moving past that into high school, I was kind of looking for my own niche in artwork because both my parents are artists. They're crafts people. My mom's an artist and photographer, and my dad does pottery. He doesn't do it for a living, he probably could if he wanted to. He does pottery, and so he has a bunch of kilns. And one day he just came in and asked me, "Hey, Kurt, you want to start making knives?" Because I guess he had researched it, saw it somewhere, and just decided we could probably do that. And I was like, yeah, because I felt like I just got tired of, you know, playing video games or whatever I was wasting my time on. And so we went out to the store, got some mild steel, got an anvil that, you know, you hit it with a hammer and it sounded like wood, you know, just made a little soft thunk. And anyway, we had no idea what we were doing, but we both went out and got some stuff. I got a hammer. He got the anvil. We modified one of his kilns so we could stick some metal in there and get it hot. And that night I was forging late into the night on a tiny, tiny little anvil that was like just sitting on the concrete. I have a picture of myself doing this, and it was just sitting on the concrete. And as I, you know, hammered on it, it would bounce a little bit. It was ridiculous, but I fell in love with forging. And I was 17 at the time. So I was probably between my sophomore and junior year of high school. From that point on, I loved the knife making craft, and I had no idea what I was doing for the first 2 years or so. And then I met Brett Foster. So yeah, but that's where it all started.
So it sounds like, this sounds like, you know, this story would happen 50 years ago, but how old now?
Yeah. It does sound kind of, it feels that way. It really does feel that way. I started when I was 17 and I am 24 now. So
got it. So it was about 70. All right. So 7 years ago. Okay.
But yeah.
No, that's incredible though. And so the first 2 years from roughly, you know, give or take 17 to 19 was when you really cut your teeth. Just learning from making mistakes, it sounds like.
Yes, exactly. I just tried things, and I was honestly, it was making original creative work. Wasn't good, by any stretch of the imagination, but it was creative and original, which I, it's hard to, it's one of the hardest things to do is make original work. And I really like making practical things, and it's really hard to make original practical things because just about everybody and their brother has made, I mean, anybody who's made a knife has made something practical and for years and years and years and years. And so all you can do is kind of just make what most everybody else has made. You can change up materials and design and stuff like that, but generally it's going to have an edge and a point and all that. But yeah, that's the first 2 years was basically just trial and error.
It sounds like you met someone that, that changed the trajectory of what you were doing.
Absolutely. Bert Foster. So Dad and I went to a hammer-in. Dad and I went to a hammer-in in...
And what's a hammer-in for those of us that have no idea?
Yeah, so a hammer-in... Yeah, I say that like everybody knows.
No,
a hammer-in is a... It's kind of a... It's a get-together of a bunch of people who love knife making. And a bunch of master smiths are paid a pittance, basically, to... Just like for their traveling, basically, to come out and do little tiny little classes. And people pay like a $75 entrance fee, and you learn how to, you learn from some amazing knife makers. So I met Bert Foster at this hammer-in. It's the Smoky Mountain hammer-in at Haywood Community College. Oh, wow. And he is my favorite knife maker in the world. I think he's probably the best. He would probably dispute this, but I think he's the best. And I think there would be a lot of people who would agree with me.
Wow.
Just, and when I say best, it's not that there aren't people who are better at certain things in knife making, but as far as best, he's very, very creative. He's nerdy about all this in a good way. You know, he's like, he's a scientist when it comes to all this stuff. And when I met him, I just met him and I talked to him a little bit, got to, you know, I just introduced myself to him, basically looked at his knives, and I was in awe of, you know, his work. So that I just sort of met him there. And then when I started looking at colleges in my senior year of high school, so this was real close in that time, I think real close after that or before that, I was looking for colleges, and I went out because I got accepted to TTU. That's Tennessee Tech University. I got accepted to TTU for metal crafts, art. You know, I was going to get an art degree. I met Andrew Mears, who is another amazing, amazing bladesmith. He advised me when I was looking around the campus. I thought it was really cool and all that, and I thought about going. And then he's like, if you want to learn how to make knives and do it for a living, go talk to Bert Foster. Don't go to college.
Right.
It's like his advice was don't go here. And so I was, you know, I was kind of torn because the campus at TTU is really, really cool. I mean, it's an amazing place. But you can't really do much with an art degree, honestly. Like you can't do much with an art degree. And I would have been like $20,000 in debt.
Right.
At the very least. And with a bachelor's degree, probably. And so Andrew Mears sent me to Bert. I decided not to go to Tennessee Tech. And I just started, I went and made friends with Bert. I called him up and he said, yeah, come over to the shop. I just asked him if I could come ask him some questions. And
he's
been doing,
he from you, Aaron?
He's about 30 minutes. Yeah. He's about 30 minutes from where I live. So that's why Andrew said that. He was like, if you live 30 minutes from Bert, just go talk to Bert and he'll lead you, teach you what you need to know, basically. And so I called him up. I looked up his website and I called his number and he answered. And I asked him if I could ask him some questions, go ask him some questions about business and like, how do you make it happen? How do you make knife making a living? And he said, yeah, come on over. And so I went over there and we spent, you know, I spent an hour probably at his shop, first 30 minutes just asking him questions. And then I watched him work a little bit, I think. He looked at some of my knives that I'd already made. He encouraged me in that. And he gave me a lot of really good advice from that point. And then he kind of took me under his wing. I don't know if he expected to do that or not, but he did. And so I started going to his shop like every other week, taking advice from him. I banged my head against the wall on certain things in knife making that I've been trying to do. And then I'd go to him with all those questions that I'd built up over the last 2 weeks and flood him with a bunch of questions. He'd give me a couple answers and then I'd go back and it would work. You know, I would figure out how to, I would figure it out because he would either show me or he'd tell me something that might work, and it worked. And happened.
And it's probably hard for you to think. It's probably hard for you to think back to then, because now this stuff's probably secondhand. But is there anything that you can recall that you were trying to figure out, couldn't crack it, and then he gave you a little pointer, and then all of a sudden you're like, "Wow, figured it out."
Yeah, absolutely. Let's see. Well, in knife making, there was some leather. I mean, Bert basically taught me everything I know about sheath making. I know a bit more about leather now than other types of leather work now, but everything I know about sheath making, I learned from Bert, and just experience. So as far as knife making goes, forging my bevels, for instance, forging bevels symmetrical and actually getting a plunge in the grind, because you know there's a different, you know, there's a drop off from the ricasso.
Yep.
The ricasso is the flat part right before the handle meets the blade. It drops down and there's a plunge that goes into the bevel. I don't know if I described that well enough, but
no, and it's like a nice smooth rounded surface to get down to the right part.
You can do different things with that. So sometimes I do a plunge that is a sweeping plunge that has kind of a line that kind of curves around and goes up into the flats, that kind of thing. Or it can be a sharp drop off into the bevel. And so you can do all sorts of things with that. But I just wasn't thinking about that at all until I saw his. And I was like, how do you forge that in there? And so he showed me that, and he showed me that, you know, the anvil, you have to have the blade, you know, the anvil does just as much work as the hammer does. And so you have to, anywhere you hit the blade with a hammer, you have to have the anvil underneath it. And if the anvil is touching other parts of the blade that you're not wanting it to move, then it's going to move those things. Anyway, he just showed me a lot of those kind of things, handle sculpting, all sorts of things that I just wouldn't have even thought of to ask, actually, because eventually he just let me come watch him work, and I saw all sorts of things that he did that I was like, I slapped my forehead, you know?
Stuff that you weren't going to see at TTU, that's for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Unless Andrew Mears was there, and then he probably would have shown me some stuff. I probably would have learned a lot there, no doubt. But yeah, no, not nearly as much and not as specific, because what Bert does, he's been making knives for a living for over 20 years now, and he's very efficient. So I learned how to be efficient with Bert. I mean, I learned a lot of good fit and finish stuff from Bert, but I also just learned how to be efficient with my knife making.
Because that's interesting, because when I think of knife making, which for me would be more of a hobby than a, you know, I live it and breathe it.
Right.
You think that that would take, you know, hours and hours to do this smallest thing. But when you get to the level you guys are at, not only do you want it to look like it took hours and hours, but you also want to do it. You don't want to have to redo it and fix it and all that stuff.
Exactly. You want to get it done, you know, right the first time. And, you know, there are some knives that happen that way, but just about every knife I make, I have to wrestle with something or another. And sometimes that same process on another knife goes really easily, and then something else becomes really difficult on that knife. But for the most part, you're trying to make knives that are worth, that are really high quality, still handmade, because that's what people like. They like the handmade aspect of it. They like that it's handmade, and they like that they can get to know the maker and stuff like that, and they can collect. So, but a lot of people just like the fact that it's high quality. You're using the best materials you know how to forge on and how to use handle, you know, best handle material you can get. So you're trying to make high quality knives as fast as possible. And so there's a lot of little things you can do to make that happen. And some knives, just doesn't matter what you do, it's going to take a long time to do. So you have to charge more for those kind of things if you're going to do that, you know, and earn a living. But you have to figure out what sells well. You have to figure out how to make those things quickly. So,
got it. So, okay. So, no, this is incredible. So it sounds like, you know, not only everything you do, but everything with the company that I know, it sounds like you kind of fell into that side. That wasn't how you set out, but you know, Free Hill Blades became an output because of you loved what you were doing. But walk us through how I transitioned from, you know, the childhood passion to learning from one of the best in the world. And then to, all right, I need, you know, this is something I love. This is something I want to do with, you know, as much time as I possibly can. And need for that to happen, I need to turn it into a business.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I have always loved the practicality of knives. I don't care what you say. I think that everybody should have a knife on their, you know, on their person because they're just so handy. I mean, people ask me all the time, what do you use and what do you need a knife for? And I'm like, to cut things, you know, it, like open boxes, cut rope, things like that. I mean, not everybody has to have a knife. I know that, but I think they're super useful. And so I've always liked the practicality of them, and I've never been into like fantasy stuff as much as some other people. And so I stick to more practical stuff. But when I started making, and that shows when I started making knives, I just wanted to make a knife I could use, basically. Yeah. And so starting, you know, from that point, from just kind of trial and error, learning on my own to meeting Bert, I realized I could do it for a living. And I learned that through Instagram, actually, because Instagram is the main way I sell. So I had a personal Instagram and I started posting knife pictures on it, and I became obsessed with knife making. So it wasn't like a struggle or anything to sell, to not sell, but to want to post anything. Like, I wasn't just trying to make a business on my Instagram. I was just posting the things that I made. And eventually people started taking notice, and when they got better, people started taking notice and they started asking for custom knives and stuff like that. And it was very sparse for a long time. So if you know anything about Instagram, it takes a while. And back then it was a lot easier, actually. Now it's really hard. It's like you have to jump through all sorts of hoops to get anywhere with Instagram. But back then it was a little easier. The algorithm wasn't as complicated and you could gain followers a lot quicker with hashtags and all sorts of things.
Yep.
And so I started getting some inquiries. I didn't sell them for very much, but I just started basically being able to pay for my materials and new tools here and there. I didn't make any money, obviously. But
so that's interesting. So a lot of folks in skilled trades and skilled crafts like yourself, they can make some of the most beautiful stuff. But if you don't have the other side of how you're going to sell it and how, you know, it's a hobby. It actually can't really become a business until you figure out that other half of the equation.
Honestly, actually, I tried selling on like eBay and stuff like that, but it's horrible. I mean, it's because there's so many like Pakistani $20 knives on eBay and all the other selling platforms that there are out there. Plus, they have all sorts of guidelines on what you can sell. They have, and there's just so many things that it made it really difficult.
And eBay, I'm an eBay user on a K. I used to be a power user, but you can't really tell a good story on. It's harder to tell a good story on eBay.
Yeah,
you know, you look at your Instagram profile, and the whole thing is like your brand story and your ethos, like laid out there.
It's definitely a story, and it's like it is a daily story. People, that's what I was saying. Like, people want to get to know me, and they want to know that I'm a person, not just a company. Right. They want to know the things that I'm struggling. Like if I fail, I put that on my story. You know, I just share what I'm doing during the day on my stories and then share cool things for, you know, they have reels now. So I put fun videos on the reels and they just want to see the story behind the maker. And some of the people who actually want a knife from me will be able to see that. And they get excited about certain particular knives and that's what sells it for them.
So you've had the fortunate, you know, you're one of the lucky few in the world where you get to turn your, literally the passion that you'd like to spend your time into a full-time business. Not that that was ever your goal. And it seems like you're rocking and rolling and, you know, making incredible product, especially at a young age too, at 24, you know, sounds like some of the guys you learn from are like, wow, he's doing this at a young age. What's the, you know, you've gotten to a high level in this skill at a young, what's the biggest thing that keeps you up at night? What are you tackling next? Is it, hey, because it sounds like there's probably a lot of things you're going to learn knife making skills and strategies for the rest of your life, but you've got the basics down. Is it more the business side? Is it, hey, how am I going to, you know, what's the biggest thing when you're worried about, all right, I want to keep doing this forever that keeps you up at night?
Yeah, it's probably the business stuff. The taxes, first of all, is hard for me. Just trying to figure out all that stuff, and I know that's hard for a lot of small business people. And the government doesn't make it super easy on you. You know, it's not super user friendly. So, for those out there struggling with that, I feel you. I would say get a good accountant because. If you're trying to make a business out of this, you want a good name behind your taxes, and actually you learn a lot. If you just pester your accountant for information on like how this works and why things are like this, then you'll learn a heck of a lot about that sort of thing. Yeah,
no, it sounds like your challenge though is common with a lot of people, especially, you know, owner operators like yourself, which is your time is best spent in your craft. You sitting behind a desk looking at your taxes, you know, you got to make sure it's right. But like, you know, and that's the hard part is people not wanting to, you know, oh, my accountant cost me a couple $100 to do my taxes. But in reality, that's peanuts. You could have been, you know,
right.
You could have made a bunch more knives and created much more value.
Time is money. And especially I'm getting married soon. And
Congrats.
Thank you. I'm super excited about it. And I just know that time is very, very valuable. I'm not just talking about money. I'm talking about worth. And so when you're deciding how you're going to spend your time, are you going to spend your time when, you know, during your work hours, are you going to spend your time making the money? And then at home, are you going to spend all your time doing taxes or are you going to spend it with your wife or your significant others or your family, kids? That's something that's really important to me as far as business goes. I'm trying to walk that line of time management because I don't want it to become an idol for me. And so which is a hard thing to do when it takes up all your time, especially if it's your passion, like you really love doing it. You know, God gave me this ability. And so I love it, and I'm thankful that he gave it to me as a job. But I also want to, you know, I'm a Christian. I want to spend time in the Word and praying and investing in other people. So
that's great. And I think that's the good and the bad with you, you know, owning your own business at one, at a young age, and two, being, you know, you don't have a huge team that you have to manage, which also becomes, that's a time suck.
Yeah.
You're able to hopefully focus most of your time on doing what you love and what you're best at, and then fill in the gaps with people that, you know, you're on a scale of 1 to 10, you're, you know, you could argue you're a 10 knife maker, but you're a 2 tax accountant. So you should have someone else doing that, right? Versus you trying to be like
exactly.
a four out of ten on a tax accountant. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's a lot to be said for time management and farming things out. As far as what I like for me, I don't know that I ever want to get bigger than a one-man knife shop. I love making every single knife. I love putting my eye on every single one, and being in all the details. And I don't want it to become so much of a business that I don't love the craft anymore. I want to be 80 and still making knives if I can be, you know, if I have the ability, whether that's for a hobby or for my work. I know I'll always love it.
That's commendable, because on this, you know, on this show, we talk to folks like yourself, one man crews that want to stay that way. And then you get to the other end of the spectrum, you know, people have thousands of employees.
Yeah.
You know, you could say, hey, you've got 1,000 guys and girls making knives, but you're spending zero, you know, you're hiring, firing, managing, accounting, you know, you actually lose complete touch with the craft, and it becomes, you're doing something you didn't even want to do in the first place.
Yeah. And so the challenge with that is, with being a one man shop, is trying to figure out how to make money as a one man person. Cause you can make more money if you hire more people and do things faster and make things better and things like, you know, obviously you want to make things better, but, make things faster and all that, and build your business up and do all that. You want to make more money. Yes. But does it cost too much? You know, does it cost too much of your time, and does it cost too much of your love for the craft, things like that?
Yep.
So the balance is trying to figure out how to be a one-man shop, how to make enough money to live and work and provide for your family, but also not making it bigger than you want it to be.
Right. And it sounds like if you want to keep it to yourself for as long as you can, which who knows, you might change, and you know, in 10 years from now, when you're at the very old age of 34, you might say, hey, I want to get someone else to help me do one part of this. But you're building, I think the biggest value though, is you're building a brand that's got real credibility, which is over time, not that you're going to want to, but will allow you to charge more for your products as the brand gets more valuable. You're getting more efficient, so you can make more knives faster. And so as long as you keep your costs low, you know, when you focus, you know, it seems like there is a clear path to how you can get this from where you are today to, even if you did the same revenue, you can make more bottom line, and, you know, maybe you spend more time with your wife, and if you want to have kids in the future, you know, all that stuff. And so you can kind of control the dials a little bit, but based on control of your life right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm thankful for how small of a business it is, and the other thing that keeps me up is like, I'm not where I need to be in order to continue making. I'm still buying tools. I'm still trying to build a shop right now. So there's a lot of, like, for me personally, there's a lot of growth that still needs to happen as far as that small business goes. Yeah. Because right now, actually, I'm sharing a shop with Jason Knight, which has been an awesome opportunity. He's been super generous with me. Jason Knight's he's an old time blaze. He's not old, but he's much older than me and much better at knife making in some regards, and he's taken me into his shop, and we shared rent for a little while, and now he's giving me the opportunity to, he's contributing my half of the rent basically to helping me get the shop built, the new shop.
Oh,
built.
Nice.
So he's been super generous with me, just because, you know, we made friends, through Bert. Bert's a good friend of his. Jason came over and just decided to have pity on me basically. He's just, you know, Christian generosity, I think, is a good way to say it. So, but yeah,
sounds like the network you've got down there is super tight and supportive. Versus, hey, he's my competitor. I'm gonna, you know, how do I screw him? And it's like, you guys are like, no, we want to keep this going. We want to,
get more people involved. The network is very, very generous with information and trying to lift and build each other up, which is super great. Jason's always generous with so many people. And I get to be one of those people. So it's been great. And I'm very, very thankful. I am, he is growing. And so I'm trying to make my own strides to move into my own shop and be self-supporting. So
Oh, that's great. Yeah. It sounds like, by the way, at age 24, it sounds like you've got your act together a lot more than I did when I was 24. That's for sure. So I think your patience is going to be your friend here.
Yeah. It is a long process trying to get to where, you know, I'm not trying to rush things. I'm not, you know, the grass is always, it really is. It's always greener on the other side. If you idolize something, it's important to enjoy and be grateful for the things that you have that God's blessed you with right now, because you can idolize that thing down the road, and when it gets there, it's never going to satisfy you. And so as far as building the business up, I am trying to make strides to move beyond and be self-supportive and support my family with it. It's more about just trying to provide and trying to, build the business for that reason at this point.
Yep. It's not more than just you now.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Not that it doesn't ever, sometimes I fall into that making it too important category too, but it's been good. I've been enjoying it.
So
yeah,
you could spend, we always like to ask two questions at the end. If you could spend 30 minutes with anyone in the world that could be past, present, living, deceased, anyone, who would it be and why?
Just anyone? Doesn't have to be anyone. Like in my trade or anything like that?
Nope. It could literally be the craziest person, you know, could be a musician for all, you know, doesn't matter. Just this will help us understand who Kurt is. And it could be someone in your trade, and, you know, that's fine too.
But. Yeah. Honestly, it may sound strange. Like, as far as, all right, so somebody in my trade, I've met all the people that I really want to meet in my trade. not to say I don't want to meet other people, but the people that I really idolize in my work, that I look up to a lot, idolize in a good way, the people I look up to in my work, I feel like I've met. Jason and Bert are probably my favorite knife makers ever.
And you get to spend 30 minutes with them, it sounds like, on a regular basis if you really want to.
Yeah, I mean, if I wanted to, yeah, I'm sure he would. But yeah, I as far as people, I would just anybody. And this may sound strange to a lot of people because not everybody's a Christian, but for me, my life has been highly influenced by R.C. Sproul, he's a theologian that's passed a while back. And he taught me a bunch of stuff about theology and doctrine and stuff like that. But mostly he brought me to Christ.
Oh, wow.
And that's it's my life centers around Jesus. And so that when you ask that question, that's kind of going to be my answer. I mean, and I'm not going to say Jesus, because every Christian, I think, wants to spend 30 minutes with Jesus, more than 30 minutes with Jesus. Yeah. So R.C. Sproul would be one, because he's definitely my hero in theology.
Love that.
Him or C.S. Lewis.
So when you're not, you know, at the shop figuring out how you're going to get your own shop, or worrying about how you're going to forge something, or, you know, the business and all that stuff, when you get to unplug and hopefully do something unrelated to knife making, which sounds like it's probably far and few between, mm-hmm. what's your release? What do you, like to do?
You know, it changes from time to time. It used to be soccer. I used to play soccer, and then I coached for a year. I coached for a season anyway, not a year, but, and recently, actually, it's been leather work. Not just sheath making. I've been making bags and wallets and stuff like that. And it's honestly, I've thought about making it like a side business, making it, because I honestly believe in diversifying skills. Like I think you should focus on one thing and get really good at it and try and make that your business. But I think you should develop other skills as well.
Yep.
So I've been working on leather, you know, thin leather goods, that like wallets and bags and stuff like that. And I've been really, really enjoying it.
My guess is that also feeds your business too, because you're learning about a different type, you know, that probably feeds your sheet side of the business, right? And vice versa.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I learn a ton about, every time I work with leather, I learn something about it, and it helps me in my sheath making. And, you know, just as a general rule, the more time you spend doing something, the better you're going to get at it. And, yep. So as, you know, when I have my hands working at something, it helps the business, no doubt.
Yeah. Awesome.
So that's been my release, honestly. Like, it's been therapeutic almost.
Yep.
It's been interesting. Yep. I used to hate leather work because it wasn't knife making. And it was kind of just like an add-on. I had to hand sew a bunch of stuff. Having a sewing machine helps a lot. I'll say that. Having a sewing machine helps a lot because people, you know, I play around with leather work. You know, to make things fast, you kind of have to have a sewing machine.
Yeah,
because hand sewing takes forever, so that helps a lot. But yeah, and I almost don't want it to become like a moneymaker for me. Like I kind of would enjoy making leather stuff for money, but
right.
I enjoyed making knives for fun back in a while back when I first started, and then I made it a business, and then. It became different. It's not to say I don't enjoy it. It's just not the same as it was. I get my fill every day, and then I just want to do something else. You know, it's like yep. I do get tired of knife making during the day. So it's just tricky a different balance. Passion. Yeah, it is. It's tricky.
Oh, awesome. So. Awesome. Well, Kurt, this has been incredible getting to, one, get to know you. You know, you probably don't see it this way, but someone at such a young age, at, you know, clearly headed to the top of the craft, learning from the people already at the top of the craft, it's like clear what you do and how you do it and how you manage around it. And I think this has been incredible. And you know, like I said, we really appreciate you take, you know, time is money, and you just took some time out of your day to share your story with folks today and for years to come. So we really appreciate you joining us here on Bucket Talk.
Absolutely. Thank you guys so much for the opportunity, and I'm thankful to be able to share my story. I hope it encourages people.